Welcome back to our learning. Today we're going to be focusing on as we move into our next stage of understanding our Mefarshim, who's asking the question. We're going to be looking at the Torah Tamimah Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein, Be'ezras Hashem. I wanted to start off by thanking Suri for sponsoring our learning this morning, and we're marking 3 yahrzeits. So just this last Wednesday we passed the yahrzeit for Esther Bas Menachem Mendel. That's Suri's grandmother, Bibi, who was single-handedly the one-stop shop for Tom Cheshavis in Farakwe in the day. And now it continues, Baruch Hashem, but that's, you have to know where it starts from. Also, Suri's grandson's yahrzeit is this coming week, on the 16th of Teves, Yadid ben Shai Tzvi Esther Shifra, Nishmasai Eden, and also the next day for Suri's father, Harav Reuven ben Chaim. Who, for among many things, being a founder of the Five Towns Farakway community, was also the Gabbai Rishon in the White Shul for over 40 years. And we are fortunate that a week ago, Sunday, has a namesake. He just was brist and entered Klal Yisrael. What a wonderful thing. Mitzvah Shemi's legacy should continue. Amen. Thank you for sponsoring today's learning. We're going to learn about one of the most colorful, most fascinating, interesting people in the in our history, and his name is. Did I miss something? Did I miss something?
No.
Oh, okay. So we're going to learn about a very, very fascinating individual whose name is Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein, a very unusual person who was a Talmud of the Yeshiva Volozhin that we learned a little bit about last week. He was both the nephew and the brother-in-law of the Netziv. His father was the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Chiel Michel Epstein, who was the Rav of Nevardok. The Aruch HaShulchan before the Mishnah Berurah came out was the go-to sefer summarizing halacha in depth. There was a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch written at the same time by Rav Gansri. That was very much a summary. The Aruch HaShulchan was an in-depth and in-breath explanation of halacha throughout all the Dalet Chilkei Shulchan Aruch. That was the father of Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein. Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein had a very, very fascinating life. He grew up in the 1800s. He spent a significant amount of time in his teens, and he describes it in his autobiography. He wrote about himself, about his years that he spent in yeshiva. He describes how when he was in his youth, the times when he felt his best about his life, when things were easier and more pristine and less encumbered with difficulties. And he describes how he'd learned so long that every night he'd fall asleep, he'd come back to his room where he was staying and he was boarding and just fall asleep in his clothes. He was so exhausted from the sheer investment in Torah. So much so that his uncle, the Netziv, who was Rosh Yeshiva, took very careful care of every young man who entered the walls of the Yeshiva, made sure that one time just to send him off to Vilna for a month, just to relax, to his brother-in-law, to Rav Chaim, who said with instructions that he's not to learn too much. Because he was invested so heavily at the time. He ultimately went out to business. He became bookkeeper. Was the profession that he was involved with. At the same time, he was still very much involved in learning. Very fascinating. You can a person, critical thinker, sentimental individual. You can read a lot about himself. He writes extensively. And among the books that he wrote, the one that we're going to be looking at now is the Torah Tamimah, which means the pure Torah. We're going to see a little bit more about that. He wrote a book called the Baruch She'amar. We have a few of them upstairs in the library, on the Siddur, on the Haggadah, on Pirkei Avos. And he wrote a book called Makor Baruch, which literally means the source of Baruch. Now, obviously, he's playing off a phrase, but he means the source of Baruch means himself. So he's writing an autobiography about himself. Parts of that were translated into my uncle and the Ziv. That's the translation of certain parts that relate to his uncle. But even when he talks about his uncle, very much it's through the prism of his eyes. You can hear it. It's very colorful. It's very fascinating how he describes his life and so on. He just his interactions with people, how he spends his time, how he observes people. He's just, you know, just one example just to from the Makor Baruch, just to give you a sense of this. He describes that when his uncle sent him off to Vilna to relax a little bit, not to spend all the time, because you see in the Volozhin Yeshiva they had watches around the clock. There was learning in the Volozhin Yeshiva for 24 hours a day all the time. So there were shifts of people who learned at different times. So on a Friday night, as an example, what happened is after the Friday night meal, people would eat. Then the group A would study till midnight, and that would be the first shift. The second group would sleep from the meal, save half the meal, sleep till midnight, and pick up the second shift and go till Shacharis. There was always learning going on in the Volozhin Yeshiva. This was an engine that was moving all the time. So he was always in the second shift. Anyways, he describes how he was sent off to Vilna to get a little bit of a break from by his uncle, and so he decides he's going to go to the Beis Medrash. So he goes to the Beis Medrash, he gets a chevrusa from 12 to 2. That's that he's allowed to have a small chevrusa when he's doing this. And he's told, go to the Beis Medrash because it's the Beis Medrash of the Vilna Gaon. You'll see interesting people. And he describes all the people that comes in. He describes this regal bearing person who comes in, and he says, like, you know, this person who's, you know, espouses dignity, and every you know, there's not a single dust, a speck of dust on his garb. And as he walks in, everybody comes in, and the shamash goes and runs him and shows him these scrolls, and everybody's crowding around, and he doesn't know who this is, and he realizes it's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was a descendant of the Vilna Gaon, so he was being shown the writings of the Vilna Gaon, and he says, I wish I'd asked to see those writings, but I didn't have the guts. And then I didn't have the money to request from the Shamash to see that. And the rest of my life, I regret not having asked to see the scrolls of the writing of the Vilna Gaon and the Vilna Gaon's shul. Like, it's just all these fascinating stories. And then there was an individual who came into the shul. Rav Yaakov Sapira wrote the Evan Sapira about his travels around the world. A very fascinating person. And he happened to be the father-in-law of the writer, or the editor of a newspaper. This newspaper was an editor who had actually be taken by this Yemenite Mashiach. There was a false Messiah in Yemen at the time. And this particular newspaper had actually sort of believed that this person was the Mashiach for a little bit, and the newspaper was scorned at because of this. And the father-in-law was a certain Rav who broke a bone, and he was staying in Vilna, so he went with his uncle to go visit this this individual. And during this while he was in his visit, there was some person who couldn't stop talking, and this person who couldn't stop talking was talking about how it is that people are so terrible for following false Mashiachs, and doesn't anybody know, and don't they have any brains, and why did they think about things? And it's clearly talking about this guy's son-in-law who published all this, and this fellow is feeling worse and worse and worse, who's there visiting the Bikur Cholim. So he was a teenager, and he says to his uncle, this is his uncle Rav Chaim, not the Netziv, and he says, you know, and he brings three sources as to why it is that people, the Rabbi Akiva, believed in a false Mashiach, right? But he retracted. And he goes throughout history about Achia Shiloni. Achia Shiloni believed that Yeravam ben Avot was the right person until he wasn't the right person. And he quotes the Tzemach Tzedek. And he whispers this to his uncle. His uncle says to the crowd, my nephew over here has something to say. His nephew is he's all of 15 years old, and now he's put on the spot. So he issues the statement, and then Rav Sapir, who's listening to this now, is so happy because this is in the defense of his son-in-law, who's written the newspaper who propagated this idea about the Yemenite Mashiach, and he was so excited he pulls out a notepad under his pillow and writes it down. And years later he says that he remembers that he met somebody in Yerushalayim who came back from Yerushalayim, and this person said, when Rav Sapir came back to Yerushalayim, he published an article defending his son-in-law, and he used these three arguments. And he says, and I'm so happy that it gave him such happiness, and I forgive him in this world and the next for having quoted not in my name. This is the type of conversation, you know, the idea, the realm of brilliance, the realm of fascination. Just a really, really interesting individual. He has so many perspectives on life. He also wrote a book called Makor Baruch on the Yerushalmi, and it's Tosefes Bracha Chidushim on the Torah, which is separate to what we're about to do. What we're going to do is we're going to look at this remarkable sefer called the Torah Tmimah. I'm sure people have heard of the Torah Tmimah. I'm sure people have seen it on the shelf. I'd like to explain how it operates, because it's remarkable. This is really I was so inspired by spending the time doing this. I really wanted to spend a year just going through the Torah to remember, because it's so fascinating. Listen to what he's about to do. He has the small version I happen to have in my office. This is from the library of Rabbi Kola. Rabbi Kola was one of the founding members of our shul, and when he passed away, he donated his library to the rabbi's library. So I have a lot of the old svarim. This is the old Torah to remember. You have new ones now, bigger ones, the whole business. We're going to start a sort of over here. So this is his observation. He says like this: we all know that there are two Torahs, right? So Torah number one is the Torah Shebichsa that was given, written, Whether it's at Sinai or at the end of Devarim, that's the Machlokes in the Gemara in Gittin, but the point is that it was written down and it was given to the nation of Israel. Right, so we have that Torah. However, at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Moshe Rabbeinu an oral tradition as to how to understand that Torah. Meaning, you can't really understand what it means to say keep Shabbos if you don't know what Shabbos is, right? It's a gazun. The Torah doesn't tell us what the Tenu HaMelachas are. The Torah Shebichsav, the Torah Shealpeh explains what that really means. In that context, that was transmitted from generation to generation to generation until the times of the second century Common Era, when Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, decided to write it down because of the problems of Golus, right? And so he wrote down the first corpus of Torah Shebaal Peh in an organized sefer. There were obviously little notes that were written beforehand for memory purposes, but as a corpus of material, the Torah Shebaal Peh was written down no centuries later. And he says, but it was not written down in a way that related to the Torah Shebichsav. Meaning, when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote down the Mishnah, the system of organization that he chose, remember, most of what we deal with on a day-to-day basis is how we organize information. Right? Think about it. Even when we listen to the news, what are we doing? We're asking somebody to organize information for us, somebody to mediate information for us. Right? So how do you organize? How do you package the volume of information? All information is available today, basically, right? If you think about it, the internet has made it completely available. We have now, it's hard to talk about information that's not available to us today. And most people don't care, right? So how do you organize information in a way that's meaningful, in bytes? So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did it in a system which is called Shas, Shisha Sadarim. He organized into six silos, which is the idea of Zeraim. Those are the six sections of the Torah. But says the Baruch Shomar, says Rav Epstein, but that does not relate necessarily to the Torah Shebichsav. That's not the way that the Torah organized the information. And he says, however, in the earlier generations, when everybody was very much more learned and it was very much in the air, so fascinating when he's talking about that nostalgically, right? So we're talking the 18th century, somebody learning the Volozhin Yeshiva saying in the old days, right? People were so much more versed in the Torah that they could automatically connect the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaal Peh. However, he observes in source 3, top of page 4. Let's start at the very bottom of page 3 with where he says in source 2. He talks about Yimeyam Usharimahim, those happy days. The days where Yimeyam Netzach, Ahod, Achoch, Masatora, Be'ez Asher, Limur, Torah, Bichlal, Prato, Yochazon, Nifratz, Balam. Everybody knew Torah. It's yeshivos rabu b'chachobim v'talmidim la'alofim in a voice. There were tens of thousands of people learning. Skipping to the next page. Is that everybody knew? The second line, he says, nikarim b'torah shibichsav limkoim mosom le'inyaneihem. That's the second line by the dash. Everybody knew where it came from. But, he says, al achas kamav kamav b'zeh azman. But today, in the days that I'm living, in the 19th century, there are so many difficulties for the Jewish people. There's just the basic day-to-day grind of getting by. People didn't have money for anything. They didn't have money for food on a basic level. I was reading his father's work, the Aruch HaShulchan, yesterday. The Aruch HaShulchan was describing the responsibilities of giving tzedakah. And he makes a side observation. This is his father, who says that if all the rich people pulled together all their money, there wouldn't be enough to support the poor people. That's what his father said. Now, I don't know if that's the case perhaps in America today, and in the Jewish community, or in just America in general. If all the wealthy put their money together, I think it would be more than enough to satiate. But the reality we're dealing with here in Eastern Europe, that was not the reality, right? So he's saying it's so difficult, and there's these pashus limudei achol. That means to say, he doesn't just mean to say, oh, there's academic subjects. He's talking about how the closure of the Volozhin Yeshiva was as a function of the Russian government forcing its universal curriculum, which would spend most of its day on secular studies in Russia, on it. So, meaning it's just hard to learn Torah anymore. He says, "Vayetzios vanidudim mimedina lemedina mimedina sayam." And people had to go from country to country. V'limud haTorah Shebaal Peh bichlal holeich mismaet. Those who know the Torah Shebaal Peh are getting fewer and fewer. We need to defend the Torah Shavapeh because it's becoming less and less. I'll throw in a story he adds about his uncle. His uncle was approached by a maskil. This is one of the big challenges at the time. Was the maskil and people who are very much versed now in academia and are speaking to the Torah personalities. So he describes there's a certain maskil who was a linguist, a Hebrew linguist, right? Academic Hebrew. Came to the Netziv, his uncle, and said, wait a second, I don't understand. Why is it you're so well-versed in Hebrew? The ideas and the diokim that you make on the Torah are so incredible. We've spent years and years and years and years working on Hebrew academically, and you haven't done anything academic on that level, the same level of rigor, and yet your ideas are so remarkable. How does that work exactly? When did you have time to do this? We know that you're a Rosh Hashiva. We know you're fundraising. We know that you're trying to look after Talmidim. When do you have time to learn language? So the Netziv says, I'll give you an example. I'll give you a mashal. This is the Netziv said, literally as he finished, he said that when we say in Eish Yisrael the following line. Okay, so just to give you a sense of what the Baruch Shomar is saying over here. Let's just let me just quote it so I don't misquote and misrepresent this. So we say in Eish Yisrael, which is a pasuk in Mishlei. Where is this specific line? Yeah. Sodin asa vatimkar. She makes a sheet of cloth and she sells it. V'chagar nosna laknani, but she gives over a belt, a sash to the Canaanite, referring to the person in the marketplace. So the Netziv says, why is it that she's selling her linen, but she's giving away her belts, right? The sashes. Just a basic observation said over every Friday night. What does that mean? So the Netziv says, you know, there was a fellow who was a big clothing merchant out in Vilna. And he bought, you know, a huge amount of material, and he had a particular supplier in Moscow. He ordered a extensive amount of material for his store, right? He's refilling inventory. He gets the bill, and when he receives the bill, he's in a hotel room with a fellow who's a friend with. This fellow is a small retail store. You know, it doesn't sell too much here and there. It's like, you know, haberdashery, everything, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And this fellow sees the invoice for this large order, and he's like, wow. I mean, like we talk about the volume is something is staggering, nothing he would ever deal with. But he notices what's not on the invoice, and that is, he says, with that amount of cloth that you've been ordering, he says there must be a lot of rope and boxes, rope to tie it, and boxes to hold it, and they didn't charge you for it. So he says it must be that the supplier obviously is very plush, right? He's got a lot going on, and therefore, maybe what I could do is I could go there and get, obviously rope and box is clearly an easy thing, so maybe I can go there. So he goes off to Moscow, and he knocks on the door, and he says, could I have rope and box? And the man says, absolutely. He goes and gets a whole bunch of box and rope, and he gives him an invoice. He says, but why are you charging me? I saw this fellow got all the rope and the box for free. So he said, yeah. He says, no. He says, but that's because he bought that amount. He bought that many cartloads of material. So we're just going to throw in the rope, and we're going to throw in the boxes because that comes with it, right? You want to just buy this, then buy it, right? That was, it just comes along with the purchase. So the Netziv says, I've given my greatest asset for Torah, and that's my life. I've spent every waking moment of my life learning and teaching Torah since my youth. I've given my strength and my youth and my life, everything for Torah. He says, that's the cloth, right? I've been invested in that as well. So you know what? When it comes to the, we'll call it the mechanics of how that works, which is the language, the linguistic, that comes as an add-on. That he says, but you aren't buying the cloth. You just want the rope, right? You just want the framework, right? So then you have to pay for it. You're going to spend all those hours doing that. Was the Netziv's answer. That's a remarkable idea. That's what he argues is the sodin osto atimkor, the cloth you have to sell, but the chagor that comes with it. You're dealing with the belt, which is the linguistics. That's fantastic. But that's that. Remember, understand where it comes from. Where it comes from. Volumes of Talmud. So says the Baruch Shomar in his introduction. He says people today. He says they're not getting it. They're not getting it. They're still just buying the rope, right? That's all we're dealing with. The Torah Shebech Seven, trying to, we've lost the framework, right? So therefore, he says, therefore, Kam tanya hatzair. He says, I, the young one, am getting up. And he goes on to say, in source 3, V'karazi shem achibur ha-Torah shetimim al shem inyonoi. What is this book about? Ki Torah zu, Torah shebichsav, heim heim chamesh eschem shechum she Torah bis achtusa, achurati shlema im Torah sheba al peh. I put together the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaalpe. Therefore, the word Tumimah means pure, complete. I'm completing the Torah. If you reverse a page, I put a picture of what the Torah Tumimah page looks like. So on the top, you have a pasuk, and then below it, you'll see the Torah Tumimah. That's where he puts all the drashas of Chazal on that pasuk. And then below that, he has comments to explain the drashas of Chazal on that. So what is he doing? He's saying, I'm taking what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi did as trying to restore the Torah Sheba'al Peh, and I'm bringing it back to where it was sourced, which is the Torah Shebichsav. So now you can look at one page, and on one page you'll be able to see the entire picture. That's what it's meant to be. It sounds so simple, right? But it's so not simple. There's no other sefer that really does this. There is it later on the Torah Shlema by Rav Nachum Kasher, who didn't finish the work, who takes all the Midrashim, but we'll see in a moment how the Torah Tumim is slightly different. So at this point in time, you say, that sounds like a great idea. I mean, in theory, that sounds like a great idea. But when you start actually considering it, it doesn't actually work so well. Because there's a lot of problems. And that is that some drashas are really long. Some drashas are really short. Where do you choose? What kind of drashas do you choose? Which drashas do you not choose? How do you explain a drasha out of the context of the passage that it came from? Like, there's so much. Where do you start? Where do you not start? Won't what you're writing just turn into another Midrash Rabbah or another Yalkut Shimon? Like, where do you begin and where do you end? So like the Rambam does, what the Torah Tumim does is he gives you rules as to what's going to be included and what's not included. So he writes 10 rules. We're going to go through those 10 rules, and it's really fascinating in terms of methodology as to how to understand what he's doing, and then you can appreciate the brilliance of his work. So rule number one is what he calls multiverse drasha. So this is a very classic example. The Gemara tells us a number of places, but the place he's quoting it is Sota. The Gemara says, in the name of Rabbi Chama, in source 4, you should follow God. Walk after God. What does that mean? You can't walk after God. What does it mean? God is a consuming fire. What that means is that he's not physical. He's not, right? You don't just walk after God. You follow his actions. What does that mean? God clothes those who are unclothed. He made Adam and Eve clothing. You see somebody who needs clothing, buy them clothing. Hashem visited the sick. And it goes on to say, all these things Hashem does, we see from the Torah, so it goes on, you should do. That's what the Torah is. So says the Torah to Mimma. So what's the drasha? What's the mainstay here? The main drasha is on what pasuk? Achar Hashem lekechem telechu, go after God. Then the subsidiary drashas are, there's Malbish Sharmim, right? So where do we start? So says the Torah Tumim, in situations like this, I'm going to quote the general rule under each of the subsidiary places. Okay, make sense? Meaning, when it says I'm going to quote the idea of Acharei Hashem Elokechem Telechon, because that's the main one, and then the arms that come out of that are all these individual ones. But I'm not going to quote the other subsidiaries under each of the. So I'm not going to talk about Malbish Sharmim in Vayirei Olav Hashem Elonem Amrei Babi Kruchalim. Right? Make sense? Okay, so first thing to do is divide the drashas. Similarly, let's say I have a drasha which applies to multiple different parashios. As an example, there's so many of these in Shas. The Gemara tells us in Nedarim Daf Ayin Chesam Aleph, Mi'amar Kan Ze Adavar Ve'Nemar Lahalon Ze Adavar B'Shchut Echutz. This is by Nedarim and Shchut Echutz. It uses the language of this is the matter. This is the matter. What does that mean? Ma B'Shchut Echutz Aron Uvon Ovo Kol Yisrael Av Parashios Nedarim Aron Uvon Ovo Kol Yisrael. So the process of shchut echutz, of shechting, of not shechting outside, shechting in the Beis Hamikdash, is facilitated by Aaron and his children, as representing all of Israel. Similarly, with the Nedarim, that has to be the ones who facilitate it. Umabekan Rosh Hamatos, Avlahalon Rosh Hamatos, and also leaders in Klal Yisrael are also responsible as well. So I mean to say, there's a similarity between the two parashios. Now, the parashas Nedarim and Ma'ilchasa. Why is it said by parashas Nedarim that Zeadova by itself? Amar of Achabar Yaakov. Now, to show you that three individuals who are not learned are able to facilitate het nedarim. But it certainly says the heads of the tribe, so how could it be in het yotos, regular people? So you can have two avenues. It can be either a yachid mumche, a person who's an expert in nedarim, who's matir in nedarim, or three who are not experts who are doing it together. Good. Rosh Hamatos b'shuchut echutz l'mayi. So why do we need to have Rosh Hamatos by the shuchut echutz? Omer avsheches lemar sheyesh sha'ela behektesh. You can do a sha'el, you can go back retroactively and unmakdish something if it's not too late yet. So in other words, there's shared ideas through this what's called a hekesh, which is this we'll call parallel, this hyperlink between two parashas in the Torah, which they share certain halachas. Says the Torah to Mimma, clearly, when we're dealing with a hekesh, with a word which works, we'll call a phrase which works in different places, I'm going to have to quote the ideas as it relates to each parasha, but I'm not going to bore or tax you, the reader, with the ideas that come from the other parasha. Meaning, I'm not going to control C, copy this Gemara in both the places. I'm going to relate to you the specific halachas that relate to Nedarim and Nedarim, the specific halachas by Shchut Echutz and Shchut Echutz, and I'll reference where the Hekesh is, but I'm not going to tell you the other side of it, as the Gemara did as well, because I'm trying to tell you how to learn this parasha as well. Makes a lot of sense. That should be obvious. Now, he says there's also a hierarchy of sources, meaning, I am quoting, says the Baruch Shamar, says Rabbi Epstein, from the Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi, Sifra, then Sifrei, Tosefta, Mechilta, Mesechta, Skatanos, Sifrei, and Sifrei Rishonim. We'll see in a second what that means. And so, as well. So he says, that's the order in which I'm quoting something. So therefore, if you find a drasha, which is found in the Sifra, but it's also found in the Bavli, I'm going to be quoting in the Bavli because that's where I'm going to first. The Bavli was the later of all of these, so I'm going to quote the later of all of the sources. Don't come to me, he says, O reader, and question me and say, why did you not quote that Yerushalmi? Because if it's going to be shrouded in a similar language in the Bavli, I'm going to quote the Bavli. So he's very sharp about this as well. Meaning, there's a priority as to how I'm going to be quoting these drashas, which makes a lot of sense because there's a lot of repetition, right? And similar types of drashas. Similarly, a summary of the drasha as well, as an example. This is the example he gives about it. He's so organized. Everything's bullet pointed and everything's in his introduction. Like, take a look at this really long drasha. The Gemara says, how do we know that a Noachad, that means to say a person who's non-Jewish, is obligated not to is not allowed to bring an offering from a animal which is missing a limb, right? Meaning, as Jews, we know there's certain rules about korbanos. How do we know that there are rules about korbanos for Bnei Noach? It says mikol achai mikol basar shnai mikol amra Torah havei behema shechayin roshev orim shala. You need to have something which is alive mikol basar. It has to be that it's fully functional, has all its limbs with it. The Gemara says, "Hami ba'ilei mi'uta treifa deloi." But surely that passage is just telling us that you can't bring an animal which is terminally ill. That's what it's telling you. Not that it has to have all its limbs. Meaning, maybe it's just excluding an animal which has got, let's say, a hole in its lung, right, an internal organ problem, but not a animal which is missing a foot. So the Gemara says, "Treifa la'achayo mi la'achayo zera nafka." No, that's learned from the word that it should bring forth seed. That works for a treif, the opinion that says a terminally ill animal cannot give birth. However, the one that says a terminally ill animal can give birth, because then that should be that's not excluded from there. Maybe you should bring with you, Noach. So it means like you are healthy, the animals you bring are healthy, which means that therefore it's excluded trefa, allowing the pasuk to be used for mechusar eivar. The Gemara says, wait a second, Dilma, Noach gufei trefa haya. Maybe to Noach himself was also had a disease, who knows? Rabbi Itach, you're saying like you, Noach, but maybe Noach wasn't well. The Gemara says, Tamim k'siv bei. He says, complete. Maybe the Gemara says, maybe Tamim means that he was complete in his characteristics, not in his physical form. The Gemara says, no. It says, Tzadik k'siv bei. It says, Dilma Tamim b'drochav. Maybe it's in his ways. Lo yisalkadat is Noach for treva v'havai. We'd not think that Noach would be terminally ill. Yisalkadat is Noach treva v'havai. Amar le rachmona kavasei chayel shlemim lo ta'ayel. Then he should have said, take in ones with you, not the ones which are shlemim. So the Gemara goes on and it finally explains how it releases the drasha. Now, what is the Torah Tumimah going to do? Is the Torah Tumimah, like when he says, when I'm going to quote this drasha, as you can see, this is a complex business, right? There's There's three psukim in the movement over here. There's there's lachios zera, there's mikol achai, and there's itach, right? And all of these three need to be accounted for. Says the Torah to me, I'm going to show you what I'm going to do in this case. It's too complicated for the average reader, right? I'm just trying to read the Torah Shabbat. I'm trying to understand what the Torah Shabbat says on it. He says, here's what I'm going to do. Look at his summary of it. Source 8. This is the Torah to him himself. When he called Achai, Amar Rebbe Lazar. So he's quoting who it was in the Gemara. That's Rebbe Lazar, right? Minal b'chusar eva shasal ibnei noach. Tichsiv. Mikol achai, mikol basar, shnai mikol atovia lataivov, amra Torah, havei, behema, shechayin, roshin, evarim, shalah. It needs to be an animal which is complete and has all its extrema intact, and there's nothing which is missing. Which means, he's gone through the entire Gemara, gone through the Shaka Vataria backwards and forwards, and then said, you know what, this is ultimately what the Makor is after defense, and I'm going to quote you what that is. I'm not going to bring all the backwards and forwards, because I'm not trying to... Right, exactly. Right, I'm giving you which is a brilliant point. So when you're learning the Torah, remember, you're learning the maskana of the sugya. That's what's happening, which means, say, he's doing a lot of work. There's a lot of paddling under the water there that's going on in order for us to read what he's doing at the end. That's why that's something he's saying. You take it for granted. Of course, that's the Gemara, not so simple. Right, so as an example. Another example of this where he does more work for us is what's called expanding a drasha. So take a look at this really fascinating example. this is the Gemara in Yerushalmi. So the Yerushalmi says... in the Rabbi Chilkiah. Now, see if you can make sense of what this is. See if you can make sense of what this Gemara is actually saying. The Gemara is quoting Rabbi Chilkiah, Bashem Rabbi Simon. Is Palgun Rabbi Yochanan of Reish Lakish? Rabbi Yochanan of Reish Lakish argued. Chad Amar dineinu kedineihon. The Chad Amar ain dineinu kedineihon. Do our court procedures resemble the court procedures of the secular world or not? That's Machlokes Rabbi Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan in certain ways. Man do Amar dineinu kedineihon nicho. If we say that our court procedures do represent, there are certain shared procedures, fine. Manda Omar ain't dineno kedineon, mamakayim vayomer Yehuda. What does it mean then the Gemara says when it says vayomer Yehuda? And the Gemara answers by saying, ro divrei Yehuda. They recognize the words of Yehuda. What's going on over here? So the din that's being discussed is a basic procedure which is called poschim natsad. Which means poschim natsad is the basin would sit in a chatzi agol, would sit in a half a circle, and they would starting from the side means to say that the more junior of the judges would answer first on the sides. So, and that was where they would sit. The most senior judge would sit in the center, and would move their way outwards. And this way, nobody would be intimidated in rendering a decision by having spoken after a more senior judge. That's what called poschim natsad. Is that Jewish per se? Or is that something which is a procedure to be found in outside courts? That's the Machlokes Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Now, where does it appear in the Torah? So he quotes the pasuk that's being said over here. He goes to the pasuk which is in Bereishis Perek Lameches, which is about Yehuda and Tamar. And what happens is that Yehuda decrees that because there's been adultery, Tamar has been involved in adultery, he says, Yama Yehuda hoitzi uha v'asis orev. So Yehuda says, he makes a decree, she should be executed. Says the Torah to Mima, Yehuda, lama pasach Yehuda tchila. Why did Yehuda be the one to start first? Lefishi dinei nafash was maschile min atzad tchila. That's a procedure. Now remember, Yehuda is not in the Beis Din Tzedek of Yerushalayim. He is in the courts of, where is he living now? Adulam, right, wherever it is that he is. He is in the secular courts. Says Ulamanda Omar ain't dineinu kedinehon. If our courts are separate, different to theirs, my ikalamema. So how could he be suggesting something which is we'll call it a Jewish idea, that the most junior judge is the one to suggest first, meaning he's the first one to suggest. So says Sheniru Devara v'nichtu al Shmoi. No, they accepted this. They said this is a good practice. This makes a lot of sense, and they accepted this, which means what is he doing? Is he's contextualizing the Gemara, and you'll notice, by the way, that most of this is put in parentheses. Why is he putting this parentheses? Because he's explaining what is absent in the Talmud Yerushalmi to explain this pasuk. So he's going to summarize what is expanding what the drasha means in this context based on just two words Yerushalmi says, which is this case of Yom Yehuda. Right, that was not the main focus. The main focus of the Gemara was, do our procedures resemble secular procedures or not? And the question in case was, one question was Vayomer Yehuda, so he is now going to expand that in that place as well. But therefore reconstructing a drasha which didn't really say it in this way. Another example is implied drushas. Just it's so brilliant what he's doing. The Gemara, this is a Gemara in Orla. The Talmud Yerushalmi, the Talmud Bavli does not talk about primarily on Zeraim. So Talmud Yerushalmi is there. So Rabbi Yochanan b'shem Rabbi Yanai ilan shenotu b'soich habayis. Let's say I planted a tree in my house. Now we're not talking right. So we're not talking about a little pot plant in the corner. We're not talking about wooden floors. You plant a tree in your house. So what are the laws about that tree? So chayav ba'orla, you can't eat the fruit of the first 3 years, but potter min ha-maestros, but you don't give tithes of the fruit of that tree. How do we know that? The pasuk says, "Dichsiv aser ta aser es tukol tvuas arecha." Tithe the food, the produce of your seed, hayotzeba sodeh, which comes out in the field. What is the diuk that the Yerushalmi is making in this case? It says you should tithe the food, the produce of your field. This is not your field; it's your house, and therefore this excludes tithes. What does the Gemara not say? It doesn't talk about Orla. Exactly. So the Gemara does not give the source for Orla. Says the Torah to Mimma, it's implied. And here's what I'll do. On the pasuk of Orla in the Torah, he goes on to make up the missing drasha, which the Gemara acknowledges but doesn't prove. Right? So as an example, look at this. Source 13. You come to the land of Israel, and you will plant any fruit tree. Then you cannot eat it for the first 3 years. Says the Torah to Mimma on this. Although it doesn't say the source, this is the source that I would suggest it is. He says, "Nedartem Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yanai, Ilan Shenot B'Soich Abayis Chayv Ba'Orla." That's the Yerushalmi. In parentheses, that's where he's adapting it to this pasuk. My time, "Unatartem Ksiv B'Chol Makom Shehu." You'll plant it. Doesn't make it. Planting is independent of location. It could be my house. It could be the fields. Now, the Yerushalmi didn't say that. Yerushalmi just told us the din, but it absented the drasha. What the Torah to Mim is doing is saying, I will tell you, I think this is where the drasha is from. Is that brilliant? Right? So he's filling in implied drasha, which was not said in the Gemara, because this is where it must be from as well. There are only a few psukim of Orla in the Torah. Chaya, perfect. That was exactly right. Now, other examples. Philosophy. This is the biggest question is, if you're going to write the Torah to Mim, what do you do about a philosophy? There's lots of Medrash. Well, when we use this Medrash, we usually refer to Medrash Agada, which is the narrative Medrash about ideas and stories. But a significant amount of Medrash is Medrash Halacha, like the Sifrei Sifra, Psikta, right? These are Halacha, right? So what do you do on Medrash Agada? So he says, I'm not going to include it. Why? Look, he goes back to his goal. We'll call intellectual integrity. Source 15. Ki mit betachlis chibureinu ze. What's the point of this essay? La sois osoy lebeir sholem umuchlat li yosodei ha-mitzvois sheva Torah shevichsav. I am trying to explain to you the normative process of halacha as it applies to the mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are normative, which means it's demanding action. And that's what I'm going to fill in, is the Torah Shabbat that relates to action. If I'm going to include in philosophical theories, that's not relating to the point of this essay. Now, I could expand the scope of this essay, but that's not the point. So therefore, I'm going to leave that out. And that's why he's not going to be like a Medrash Rabbah. He's not going to be like a Tanchuma. He's not going to be like a Yalkut Shimon. He's not talking about those things in general. Sometimes it does. We'll see in a second as well. Similarly, let's say there's a dispute in Halacha. What happens if you go to the Gemara and it's Machlokes Beis Hillel Beis Shammai? What happens if it's Machlokes Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel? So which drasha do you bring? Says the Torah to Mema, I will only bring the Halacha which is kept la halacha, meaning whoever's paskenak will be the drasha I'll bring. Rashi does not do this, by the way. Rashi will bring both opinions oftentimes. But says the Torah to Mimma, no. My point is for you to understand what halacha, how the Torah Shalpeh that you're doing is connected to the Torah Shalpeh which you are reading. And therefore, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to automatically pasken. So which means to say is that there's a lot of fancy footwork happening over here when he's quoting a drasha, which you don't even realize because he's actually taking the pasken halacha, not the varied opinions as well. Similarly, he's not going to include an asmachta. This is so important. What's an asmachta? Yeah,
what's an asmachta?
Good. Okay, good. Let's go into an asmachta for a second. This is such a critical one and so important. Is that a lot of times the Gemara will say, I'll give you the classic example of asmachta. Okay, this is the way the Rambam says it. Because the Rambam as well says, I'm not going to include in my Sefer HaMitzvahs any asmachtas. That is his Shoresh Sheni, his second rule about how he writes the Sefer HaMitzvahs. In a similar way. What is an asmachta? Asmach literally means leaning on, right? Somech, right? Somech, nefilim, to support, to lean. So an asmachta is as follows. What came first? Was there a tradition that this is the idea? And then the pasuk became the hook upon which I hang the idea? Or is the pasuk the source of derivation of the idea as well? So let's understand this, what this means. Classic case. The Gemara says that the Torah, the Gemara in Sukkah is talking about the psukim which are talked about in Parshas Emor. The Torah says, "Ulakatu lochem pri etz hadar kapos tamarim." So it says you'll take a pri etz hadar. What is the pri etz hadar precisely? So the Gemara gives a lot of drushes. The Gemara gives a few options. Pri etz hadar is that shahadar that it keeps coming back every year. So it's perennial. It's a tree. It's not a something which needs to be replanted. Okay, that's one drasha. The Gemara then says something which is beautiful, right? From the word hidur, right? And the Gemara gives a number of options of this. Says the Rambam, the Gemara is not saying, wow, you know, what does this pasuk mean? Let's try to figure it out. Maybe something which comes back, maybe something which is beautiful. And now, look at that. We arrived at the concept. There's a thing called a citron. Says the Rambam, you could have arrived at many alternatives. That's not how it works. Moshe Rabbeinu told us at Har Sinai that the Pri Etz Hadar is an esrog. Right, that we know that. What the Gemara is saying is, how do we connect that oral tradition to the pasuk itself? That's called an asmachta. An asmachta is we'll lean the tradition which we know is universal, which is why, by the way, there's no dispute. Nobody ever holds a mango. It's not like one Jewish community has got the mango, one's got the banana, and somebody's got the citron. Nobody's arguing because this is what's called halacha lemoishe misinai. There was an oral tradition from Sinai, was not derived. So what's the drasha? The drasha isn't a drasha. It's not a smachta. It's leaning on it. He says, I'm not going to quote those because those are not drashas. What am I quoting? A drasha is when actually Chazal looked at the pasuk and said, let's expand out it using one of the tools of expansion, what's called the hermeneutical principles. You know, the English words which need translation, right? So the hermeneutical principles. So that's what the Rebbe Shmuel Omer, Mishloshes Jai Midrash HaTorah Nidreshes. Those are not asmachtas. So as an example, when you hear a kal v'chomer, when you hear a gzeira shava, when you have a hekesh, when you have a prato klal, when those are actually taking the pasuk and saying, I'm looking at the pasuk and I'm expanding out towards what its meaning is. But that's not leaning backwards on it. Says the Torah Tumim, I'm not going to include asmachtas. Which means that he's also making decisions as to what is an asmachta or not. Usually the Rambam says, if there's a dispute, it's a drasha. If there's no dispute, it's an asmachta. Why? Because if it's a tradition from Moses from Sinai, then everybody knows what that was. For instance, are tefillin black and square? Yes, there's 10 halachah l'moshe misinai relating to tefillin alone, right? And nobody argues with those. There's no variance in Judaism, right? And when it comes to those things. But when it comes to a drasha, they are variants. Why? Because a drasha was based on a chazal making a drasha, and there were disputants as to how that worked as well. That's the way the Rambam says it. Says the Torah Tumimah, I'm not including asmachtas. I use this principle very oftentimes, because let's say you're going through a Gemara, and you don't know, and this drasha is hard to understand what they're doing. What's the logic over here? I find that I will go back to the Malbim or the Torah Tumimah to see is it included. Why? Because if he doesn't include it, it means to say that he viewed it as an asmachta, which makes it easier to know than what they were. I mean, it's helpful. This is a tool that Rabbi Rafael Katz, when I was learning with him in our first year in Yeshiva in Kerem Biavne, told me, and it's such an important tool, is what are you dealing with? Is it a drasha or an asmachta? How do you know? Go back to the Sifrei, that's what the Malbim is commenting on, and go back to the Torah Tumim and see, is it quoted or not? Really, really helpful to a tool as well. So that's a very important principle in terms of development of Torah Shopeh. Let's just go close with a few things. Extra halachic drashas, so he points out that let's say there is a Midrash Rabbah which does have a halacha in it. I'm going to quote that, even though it's in a Midrash Agadita. So as an example, he quotes an example in Source 17, he says, Neder Lemar. It says by Yaakovinu. Yaakovinu said a Neder saying. What does it mean saying? Saying is you're telling other people. Maul Ein Lemar, the Midrash says, Lemar Ledaros, Shiyu Noidrim Lebeis Tzara. This is a Toistos quoting a Midrash Rabbah that when you're in a difficult time, make a Neder. Make a commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you get me out of this, that's Lemar to us. Another example is Timche Zecher Amalek. You should wipe out Amalek. Afilo Mina Eitzim Va'avonim. Right, even in any memory, you know, there should not be a museum of Amalek. Destroy them completely. That's quoted from the Medrash Huva Papoisim. Meaning it's not a classical Sifra that he's quoting. He says, I hear this being quoted. Similarly, he'll even go so far as to quote the Rishonim, the medieval commentators, who will quote something which he thinks is a Medrash they must have had in front of them, which he doesn't have extant right now. So as an example, this is pretty remarkable. He says, in V'chol HaShetitni, Yaakov Avinu says, that if you, Hashem, look after me, I will give a tithe from everything you give me. That's what Yaakov Avinu says. He says, Yirayli, He quotes this, "Da'avah b'she'en adam ha'makdish davar sh'lei ba'al'alam." Yaakov can't sanctify something he hasn't earned. He's impoverished. He has nothing to his name now. You can't be makdish something that he doesn't have, right? He can't say, "I'm going to give a tithe of what? What do you got? Where's your wallet?" Right? A person can say, the responsibility is not upon me, but upon my not on my assets, but on me. Then when I earn something, then it is there. Meaning I'm in the world. So I can, anything I will future, that does work. Where's he quoting this from? He quotes the Rambam in Erchin. Notice this? This is no longer Midrashic. But how do you know this? How do you know it's not in the Midrash? Because, first of all, he's read all the Midrashim, so he knows it's not there. But also, look at how Rambam begins. Yirah Eli, it would appear to me, the Torah Rebbe is going to be willing to quote that Rambam because he believes that it must be sourced in some halachic midrashic source as well. Similarly, he quotes the Sha'arim of Rav Hai Gaon, the Gaonic period post Gemara. He says the next source in 20, Vayimishuchu Vayalu, they pulled Yosef out of the pit. Mikan Doha Dekoinim Mishicha Eino Ela Adshi Yotzis Achevitz Mimukoma. The people who are buying Yosef only acquired him when they pulled him out of his pit, which shows you that if you're buying an asset, in this particular case it happens to be a slave, but if you're buying an asset, you need to move it from where it is in order to facilitate the kinyan. Why is this important? It's because what happens if it's struck by lightning in the middle? Let's say I'm buying from you a donkey, a couch, and then it gets struck by lightning when I've paid you. Whose is it? No, if you're doing Meshicha, and it's not a Kenyan Kesef, it needs to actually be pulled from where its place is. That's learned from this particular Pasuk, which is not from the Gemara. It's from Rav Hai Gaon, as an example. So just to give you a sense of how broad the scope of his halakhic inclusion is in drashas, it's worthwhile looking in the parentheses at the end to see where it's cutting from. Similarly, if let's say I have a drash which comes from multiple different Pesukim, so let's say, as an example, it says that the children of Israel, referring to this 10 sons of Yaakov, come down to Egypt to get food in Parshas Mikais, and it says, Vayavo b'nei Yisrael, the Gemara makes Yerushalmi makes an observation over here, is that we can learn v'nikdashli v'soich b'nei Yisrael. The first time the word b'nei Yisrael is used in the Torah is referring to the 10 sons of Yaakov who came down to Egypt. So you see that v'nikdashli needs to be in a minyan, not like this. The Bavli has a different drasha. This is the Yerushalmi, right? That's Eda Eda. This is the Yerushalmi. B'nai Yisrael, the first time was 10. Why 10? Because Yosef is not there and Binyamin's not there. The 10 remaining are the children of Israel. So he says, and this was learned from this week, V'nikdashi b'soi B'nai Yisrael. So says the Tartar Tamima, I'm going to quote each of these drashas in their place. Meaning, in Parshas Emor, it says, V'nikdashi b'soi B'nai Yisrael, I'm going to reference the Pasuk in Parshas Mikates. In the Pasuk in Mikates, I'm going to reference the Pasuk in Parshas Emor, so you understand how the drashas work together. But I won't do that, he says, if it's in the same Sefer. Meaning, that's from Bereshit to Vayikra. But if it's in the same Sefer, I'll just say, Ayin Sham. Just turn a few pages. Right? But dear reader. But if it's not, then I'll reference both in the full scope. And he gives an example of this as well. So just understand, when we're reading the Torah to Memo, yeah, it seems like it's simple, right? Oh, there's a Gemara there. There's a Midrash there. It's fantastic. It's like, no. There's a lot of work as to what's in, what's out, and what's explained, what's not explained as to what he's doing, which is why it's so simple and accessible. Similarly, that's why now he adds the last part of his Pirush, which is, I think, is the most fascinating part of his Pirush, which is the footnotes. On the footnotes at the bottom of every page, so he quotes, I put in the picture just before, you see in the middle is all the drashas, and at the bottom is all his footnotes, back on top of page 3. The bottom is his footnotes. That's where he includes his own ideas, because here you are, you've got a Gemara in the middle of nowhere, right? You're reading a pasuk in the middle of Parashas Truma. You see a Gemara quoted. What does that mean? What's the context of that Gemara? So now, in the footnotes, he says, this is what the Gemara is talking about. This is why I understand the drasha is working. So he'll be the glue that fills in the in-between. And then he says, and I'll add my own ideas as well. And that's what he does. Let me give you an example and we'll close with this. This is an example. The Torah says in Devarim Perek Chav Zayin, when you come to the land of Israel, you're going to go to Har Gerizim, Har Eval. You're going to write the entire Torah written well, explained well. The Gemara in Sota understands that. B'shivim Lashon is written in 70 languages. So in his footnotes, says the Torah to me, Hap mefarshim pirshu betam adavar kadei sheyavinu kol ha'umos yedu mashe kosu b'Torah. Why was this? So that all the nations that come to visit Israel will see these stones and be able to read it in Greek and Ugaritic and in fantastic. Everybody's good. So now understand this. Kvar taruchu v'amlu ha-mefarshin l'faresh ha-davar ki pshutoi sh'ayasak kol ha-torah kula k'suva al-avonim mutakois b'shivim l'ashar asher zeh davar sh'lo yishuar. He says, but it doesn't make so much sense, does it? Right? Meaning, how big are those stones? Right? Like 70 languages? Like how are you putting the entire Torah in 70 languages? Lochen korov lamar derak aseres adibros he ksuvim aleim. And therefore he says, maybe it's only aseres adibros, which, by the way, he's not the only one who says this. Maybe it's aseres adibros, which are written in all 70 languages, because that's more of a reasonable amount of material to be written in 70 languages. Kesemech raya ledover efshel hasmich miloshen es divrei ha-Torah, v'moiz ha-kavanah kol ha-Torah lo yehava ledemem es divrei ha-Torah elo es ha-Torah. Why is it divrei ha-Torah? Because it means a part of the Torah, not the whole Torah. That's his observation is. Then he says, but with the greatest of respect, maybe there's another way of looking at this. Look at the next paragraph. Omnam lulei divrei ha-mefarshim, if it weren't for the mefarshim, haya efshar lefarosh loshon b'haloshon v'shivim loshon, loy k'mo sh'regim lefarosh b'shivim safos. Doesn't mean 70 languages. Ela k'mo sh'pirushu b'zohar. The Zohar says, mashagos sh'asanhedrin ha-yu yoydim shivim loshon u'pirushu di'inon shivim ponim la-Torah. It means explain all the different facets of the Torah. Uvemes sham muchrach lefaresh kain depshuto lo yitochen v'gam hacho yisparesh kain. He says it makes more sense. They didn't write the Torah in Greek and in Persian. They wrote the Torah in Lashon HaKodesh, but they explained it for the regular average onlooker. So a person says, what's this Judaism business? Comes along and says, oh, that's what it means, which is so synonymous with what he's doing right now. Look what he's doing. He's taking the Torah Shebaal Peh, he's putting it back to the Torah Shebichsav, and he's explaining it so we understand it. That's Shivim Lashon. It doesn't mean the languages, it means the understandings as well. This is an example of where, by the way, he's not disagreeing with Chazal. He's disagreeing with the Mefarshim's understanding of Chazal. Do you notice that? Right? Shivim Lashon, and he's interpreting what Chazal meant in the Pasuk. That's the glue that exists over here. Remarkable, he does this oftentimes, and he has some very, very avant-garde suggestions actually throughout the course of his Sefer as well, which sometimes get him in trouble, because he has really, really fascinating creative ideas. I'd like to conclude with the last approbation, and we'll close with this. This is something I remember a number of years ago. I was in the office of Rabbi Zvulun Charab, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was the Dean of Reitz, of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elkanah, for many, many years. And one day he was so excited. I was one of the gabbaim in his in the Beis Medrash in Hawaii. I was the head gabbai at the time. And he comes and he says, you got to see this. You got to see this. So I said, what do I got to see? He says, you got to see this. Never have you ever seen a love of a father for a son like this. So I said, what are you talking about? He says, read the only approbation the Sefer Torah Tumimah gets, which is from his father. And he includes at the end of his introduction, it's called the Birkas Av. And I just want to read you the second paragraph, the first few lines. This is Rabbi Chiel Mechel Epstein, the father, the Orach HaShulchan. Sometimes the Torah Tumimah is criticized by people. Sometimes people say that he went too far in certain ways. Listen to what the Orach HaShulchan says about his son in the second paragraph. Uvechein, hineni korea berech. I bow my knee, lifnei Adon Olam, in front of the God. Shezakeini b'yotzi chalatzai, who allowed me to have some of my children. Baruch hu u'baruch ta'amoy. Blessed is he, and blessed is his expression. Obviously, play on his name. His son's name is Baruch. Right? Ze b'ni mishorer masois libi, my son, the joy of my heart. Hara baruch shiyichye. Shenasan eliboy hadavar hagadol hazeh. Vayolo ezer elokai loitzi es elpoal hamif'al hagadol v'anot. It's the pride of a father of his son. He is so proud. The Orach HaShulchan, who is a world-renowned Poisek and Rav of Navardok, turns and says, thank you, God, for allowing me to have a son who could do this. That's the only approbation you need for the Sefer Torah Tumimah, and that's how we'll end. What a beautiful way of thinking about that. Just a remarkable perspective. Anytime you want to understand where Chazal are coming from, the place to go, one of the places is to spend time in the Torah Tumimah. I'm going to conclude now.